The opinions voiced in this podcast are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which strategies or investments may be suitable for you, consult the appropriate qualified professional prior to making a decision. I'm Hank Stoltz, and this is the podcast of A Clear Path of Financial Advisors. Your host, as always, president of A Clear Path Financial Advisor, Ryan Kittredge. And Ryan, today, actually, is, as we promised a month ago, is going to be a part two in which you're going to talk about people who are really nearing that retirement age. We said during the last podcast, a little bit of a difference when you're 55. It's not a lot of years to 62, but different maybe in how you're looking at things, approaching things, should be reviewing what you have for retirement, and of course, speeds up a little bit after that. So I don't know if maybe we want to start just quickly with a quick review of that, but we do want to get into some of these pitfalls, maybe some of the commonly asked questions that you get or some of the common mistakes that you might see, ways in which people can avoid these pitfalls as they head towards retirement.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, I think it'd be good to recap a little bit of the conversation from last month, but I mean, it was definitely focused a bit more on investment allocations. And, you know, some of the things we talked about were how people approaching retirement, like you said, from, you know, you could be 55 and have 10 years and it feels like forever. And then 5 years goes by and, you know, 5 years out is a little different than 10 years. And then 1 or 2 years out, it's, you know, you have to be ready for it and have a plan lined up. And that could mean not being quite as heavy in stocks in your retirement accounts, for instance, right? We talked a little bit about some of the provisions within plans and the differences between how you may allocate one account a little bit more conservatively, if that's, say, like an inherited retirement account, or, you know, you're in a lower tax bracket and you're going to take from an old annuity, maybe those stay more conservative where you can let something like a taxable investment account or a Roth IRA be a little bit more aggressively positioned. So we talked a bit about stuff like that, but I think some of the other, you know, there's a lot more outside of the investment portfolio, kind of like how you approach it from that way, that people are really need to be aware of. And, you know, I see some of the, certainly, like you said, some of the questions that people have commonly, and then I see some of the pitfalls that I've seen people kind of get stuck in a little bit, where they just would have had they kind of etched it out a little bit sooner and not been kind of right on the precipice of retirement, certain things, decisions that they made over the prior 3 to 5 years really can't be unwound. So I want to, you know, share that advice with people who still have that time, and especially those that have some time, but not that much time to be thinking about.
Ryan, you just mentioned the Roth IRA. That's got to be, at this point, one of the most popular ways that people save for retirement. So why don't we start there? What starts to happen as you head out of your earning years, where you still have the income coming in, where you're going to start to rely on some of what you have put away in some of those Roth conversions, particularly in those first years of retirement?
Yeah, absolutely. That comes up all the time. And Roth IRAs are this, you know, a pretty great vehicle from the really a tax sort of tax advantaged shell kind of an account. And you can buy whatever in it. You can invest however you want in. Could buy bank CDs or stocks or whatever, really, real estate, gold, I mean, you name it. But you can, with a Roth, the difference, for those that don't know, is that unlike a traditional IRA or a company retirement plan like a 401k, instead of putting in that money pre-tax, but then being taxed when you withdraw it eventually, the Roth, you don't get a deduction when the money goes in, but all of the growth and the distributions come out tax-free. So a lot of people say, which I agree with, you know, most of the time, that for people younger in their career, they should consider, or, you know, maybe prioritize using a Roth IRA. And the idea is that, well, if their income over time could go up, and or we think that tax rates could be higher a couple decades or more down the road, then, you know, forego a little bit of a tax break today, but snowball that growth over time and then get tax-free income later when things could be at a higher tax rate. So that same idea of why a young person may consider it, and hey, there are some clients that are 50 and some that are 70 putting money in a Roth IRA. And then there are some that are into their 70s or even beyond that are converting traditional IRAs or pre-tax retirement plans to Roth. And the reason you might consider doing that is because, let's say, like kind of a typical scenario where people are working, they're at, you know, maybe sort of a higher income relative to like their whole career. Maybe they're at their peak earnings, or, you know, sort of they're at higher earnings. So if they're saving for retirement, oftentimes they're doing pre-tax accounts. But you all of a sudden now are retired, and depending on if you're starting Social Security right away or waiting, or maybe if you have a pension, if you're starting right away or going to defer it, you may be in a very low tax bracket in those first several years, perhaps, of retirement. Or maybe it's just a couple few years where you have that sort of lower income tax year. And that can be a great opportunity to basically square up with Uncle Sam on some of that money and shelter it, you know, get it moved into a Roth where the tax-free growth will be later, and there's a lot of other benefits to a Roth as well with flexibility. See,
right. Well, but this seems to me to be the kind of thing that the average investor may have heard about. Roth IRA may have said that's where I'm going to put my money, mm-hmm. but really does need an expert, needs a ClearPath Financial Partners, needs somebody who can steer them as they get closer to retirement. Because this is what you do for a living, as opposed to being an architect or whatever it is that the individual did who's been in investing, to know when you should be making these kinds of moves.
That's a great point, and I couldn't agree more with that, because it is, I mean, we do every year, we have number of clients that dozens of clients that are either contributing to Roth accounts or converting to Roth IRAs. But they're very misunderstood, and there's a ton of ways you can mess it up. And we've got a pretty good process down because we've been doing it for clients for years, and we're very familiar with it. But for an individual, like, they've never done this. They hear about it. They'll ask things like, well, I mean, even with that, even if someone says, you know what, I like the idea, I think tax rates are going to go up down the road, I'd rather kind of square up at a lower rate today. Maybe it's not as low as I'd like, but I think they're going to go higher. And so let's do this. And a lot of people are like, well, do I do it? And do I just kind of take, you know, say they have a $500,000 retirement plan from their company they were at for a bunch of years. They're like, do I convert it all? Like, do I do this all right away? Like, what about, how do the taxes work? Do I withhold them from it? And, you know, generally, sometimes it can be yes, but generally you don't want to do it all up front. Generally, you don't want to pay the taxes from the account you're actually converting, because you want to get every dollar of it right into the Roth. So you want to pay, you know, the tax bill that you've determined that you're comfortable at with from outside money. And you typically want to spread it over and have a strategy over several years to really have a pronounced impact, but without really throwing you into too high of a tax situation initially.
Ryan, so this is really not hyperbole. I mean, going into your retirement is a life-changing event. Things are going to change. Mm. And things such as Medicare, that 30 years ago, you said, why am I going to have to pay attention to that? And now all of a sudden, Medicare thresholds and everything else are things that you are paying attention to. That, I'm sure, is one of those common pitfalls of retirement.
100%. And, you know, Medicare comes up most of the time, like, unless it's a client that paid into a, like, a federal pension or state and never paid Social Security credits, and they have a health plan through. Rarely I see this with old employers as well. Like, some companies that people are retiring from, they may have their own special health care plan that they offer for their retirees that are a heck of a good deal. That's not usually the case. So let's call it I don't know, at least 80% of people out there are faced with, you know, Medicare and getting that plan, which there's sort of like a base, kind of a standard Part A is hospital insurance. And then Part B is sort of like this, you know, I don't want to get too deep into it, but basically what I'll say is that knowing what the cost is going to be is one thing, because then you need to supplement that Part B with typically like a Medigap or Medicare Advantage plan. You know, you might see for the average retiree, you know, Part B premium starts at $175 roughly per month. That's what most people pay. And then they may have a supplemental plan on top of that, which could be an extra couple hundred, few hundred bucks a month, right? So that's what most people are looking at, maybe call it $500 a month. And that's a whole different discussion of who chooses a Medicare Advantage versus others, and depends on your needs, you know, who you see for doctors, what medication you take, specialists, all that. So let's not get into that because it's nuanced and it's boring. Not that this is like as thrilling as, you know, the game on TV, but what I'll say is that one thing that catches people all the time that I would look out for is that if you retire in a given year, what Social Security does, because they record your earnings, they, you know, get your company's W-2 and they report right to Social Security. This is what this, you know, man or woman made last year. And you pay taxes on that money, not just state and federal, but you pay FICA, Social Security taxes, basically, Social Security and Medicare. And so in that last year of retirement, often your income, like we just talked about, was higher because you and your spouse were working. And now you stop working, and usually it's now lower because your paychecks stopped, right? You don't have that monthly income. Now, maybe you have other investment, you know, you have like bank savings and you get some interest from it, right? Maybe you have Social Security, but usually there's a drop. And so what happens a lot of times is people get a letter the year after they retire, and it will say, hey, so it doesn't say exactly this. It's coming from Social Security Administration, but it basically says like, hey, congratulations, you're retired, you're on Medicare, isn't this great? But because you made too much money, which is, you know, for a lot of people, it's individuals over roughly 100,000 or married couples roughly over 200,000 in the last year of working can catch some people. They're going to tack on an assessment of, call it, you know, could be an extra, you know, $100 or several hundred dollars a month based on the income that you had from 2 years ago. And so what, you know, what one way to combat that is to file an appeal of the income related monthly adjustment amount. It's called IRMA, I-R-M-A-A. It's this really ugly acronym. What it means is, guess what? You made more, so we're gonna, you pay more now for Medicare because it's this kind of like social program and, you know, pay up. But you can file this form. And for a lot of people who retired, it's as easy as saying, hey, I had a life-changing event is what they call it. And there's a few boxes, and one of them is I retired. So you can simply say, like I've seen a lot of clients do, yes, my income was, you know, our income was $250,000 2 years ago, but now it's only $10,000 from dividends and interest plus $50,000 from Social Security. So now our income is only $60,000. They often will reverse that and kind of pay you back retroactively, but they won't if you don't appeal it. So something to be aware of.
Ryan, with Medicare, or I guess with when you were talking about it, you mentioned the fact that, hey, you know, there are some people who maybe have worked for that company, and that a company had a different kind of plan. We probably don't see that as much anymore. But we also see now where this generation changes jobs like every 2-3 years. Staying with that company, getting the gold watch after 50 years is going to be a lot less common. For some of those companies that are either old school, or if you do work for a company that still offers that a pension, that pension and having that as a big part of your monthly income as you get closer to retirement, how do you view that? How do you stretch that as far as you want? And I know some of it, it's like the lottery. Hey, you won the lottery. Do you want us to pay you everything now and here's one lump sum, or do you want us to give it to you each month?
Absolutely. Yeah. And we kind of like just briefly touched on this, I think, last time.
Yes.
I may have mentioned locally, some of the big, you know, bigger employers that still have these pension plans are UMass, Saint-Gobain, and then a lot of the bigger public companies like the, call it, you know, IBMs of the world, Johnson & Johnson's. We see clients that, you know, if there's someone just working there now, they're, you know, just taking a job there, you're not going to be enrolled in it. But if you were there and you've been there for 20 plus years, then those people still have pensions. They have to pick, and, you know, do they want monthly income, or called like the monthly annuity payment, or do they want a lump sum? And there are pros and cons there of everything from, with the lump sum, you have total flexibility with when you withdraw, so you control the distributions and thus the income tax from it, because all those pensions are ordinary income. So you can sort of control. And if you don't want income certain years and more in others, you have it. You want to invest it aggressively, or, you know, with some level of risk and think you can earn a higher rate of return, you have that autonomy. But, you know, the downside of that, and where the, you know, the monthly income comes in, the monthly income is a longevity hedge, right? Let's say with the lump sum, you don't, you know, some people like the lump sum as well because there's a survivor option, and they know if they don't spend it all down, or, and if they don't live until their 80s or 90s, they're worried that they may not have a typical longevity because of, you know, their own personal health or family health history. They might say, well, boy, I wouldn't want to take that and start getting paid X a month. And then if, you know, if I, something happens to me 10 years into retirement, all of that, you know, money that would have been the lump sum is gone, and my son and daughter won't get it, let's say. So that may be a reason to choose the lump sum. But the pension, the monthly income, you don't outlive that. So it's a longevity hedge. So especially for those that think they may live a longer than the average life expectancy, or if they need a lot of monthly income and they have a big gap between what they need and what they will have, those are going to be a great option. But what I would say is, these days more than ever, Hank, because of how much interest rates came up last year, we're seeing more and more options where you can shop out those pensions. And I also see it with similar principle, but with clients that have had these old, they've had an annuity for a number of years where it has a guaranteed income payout. Now we've seen a lot of those either pensions that people are faced with, or these old annuities that are paying a guaranteed income stream, kind of like the pension option. And there are companies out there that are paying very, very competitive rates right now, so you need to shop it out. So just as an example, there was a client where his company offered, I forget the exact numbers, but on the lump sum, but it was several hundred thousand dollars, or it was like, hey, you can get $32,000 a year for life, but there are guaranteed income annuities that are available because of interest rates where they are, that when we shopped it out, we were able to get just over $40,000 a year guaranteed, but also still some access to principal and a survivor benefit. So it kind of, you know, and it doesn't always work out this way, but in this case, it gave him more guaranteed income, plus he still has that value of that account. And if he needed more, if, you know, life circumstances changed, he could take the principal, or if he wife died before that income is paid out, the guaranteed that's been exceeding the of account value, there, son will get the, you know, will get what's left. Makes a big difference when you lock it in.
Oh yeah, and so there you are with those pensions. How about that company that still is offering the stock plans? That's many. What do you do as you get ready for retirement with those employer stock plans?
Oh yeah, that's, I mean, with pensions and with stock plans, I mean, that these are things that we see all the time. And so for stock plans, it could either be a private company. And these are, again, less common, similar to like kind of the old pensions, but where it's an ESOP plan where they're giving you shares of the company that aren't publicly traded on the stock market, but they have a value. And then when you retire, they do audit, you know, their books, and they have to get a new valuation done every year. So they'll say, hey, here's what the shares are worth. But with those, they're kind of a different animal because usually they have a period of years where you can sort of liquidate it over time. But you want to see what that is. What you don't want to do is just kind of leave it and say, oh yeah, it goes up some years and it goes down, because there are restrictions on how to get it out and in the best way to do it. So you got to look at that. And then different beast, but with people working for a company with stock plans like United Health Group or Procter and Gamble or Novartis, I'm thinking of some clients that we work with. Well, they might get these employer stock purchase plans or stock gifts, grants. And often, because they say that their coworkers, when they talk to them, they're like, yeah, I don't know what I'm going to do with this when I retire. I have these employer shares, but they don't know when they're retired. Like, what do I do with these now? Do I just leave them there? And then what? Do I just liquidate them? And if I do that, well, what's the tax consequence? What do I do with the money? So depending on the plan, there are different things to do, but generally what's advisable is to, once you're no longer with the company and they're no longer granting you shares or you're no longer putting your paycheck in to buy them, usually you want to get them out of that plan and put them into, if you have an after-tax investment account, like this brokerage account that holds other investments, usually you want to consolidate it. And from there, you can track based on the date of when you own the shares and what the cost basis is, meaning what, basically how much you were taxed on up front versus what the gain is over time. You can over time strategically liquidate it as part of your plan. So we have a lot of clients that maybe they take a little bit of an IRA distribution every month, and then we may have, systematic liquidations, and we reassess each year on their stock plan. So, you have to come up with a plan for it. You don't want to just do, again, the best options usually aren't all or nothing. Like, do I convert my whole IRA or not? Or do I just leave my whole stock plan, or do I just cash it out? Usually you don't want to do either one. Usually there's like a much better strategy.
Ryan, I'm not sure we would have time to do another subject justice, so I think we'll leave people with this tease. Next month, let's talk about estate planning, give some people some updates on that and how they can reevaluate their asset ownership and beneficiaries and the trust plan, and we'll get into that.
Yeah.
But we certainly have enough time to tell people how to get in touch with you.
Yeah, absolutely. No, we'll talk about that next time too. It's kind of a, hey, I did a will a bunch of years ago, but now we're retiring, and like, should we do anything with that? So maybe, and we'll talk a lot about that next time. But yeah, if people want to reach out to us, our website, clearpathfinancialpartners.com, or they can give us a call, 508-219-7221.
I'm Hank Stoltz. For Ryan Kittredge, thank you for listening to the podcast of ClearPath Financial Partners. The opinions voiced in this podcast are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which strategies or investments may be suitable for you, consult the appropriate qualified professional prior to making a decision.